Welcome to Unraveling the Secrets, where we explore the connecting links between the pernicious deeds of a group of secret society outlaws who are creating a tightly controlled world society with them as bosses and you and I as slaves to their system, popularly known as the New World Order. Research indicates that most of the unexplained craft we see in our skies are from somewhere on or inside our planet. This led to research of the Hollow Earth and subterranean theories in the 1980s and 90s, which in turn led to the realization that the answers we seek are in the control of a number of elitist groups and secret societies that we call collectively the Controllers. Even a quick look at recent world events should convince anyone that the Controllers' plan is working very well. It is these things we explore in this radio show. Join us as we work towards unraveling the secrets.
And welcome, everyone. It's Saturday evening here on PSN Radio. I'm Stephen Roberts, and this is Unraveling the Secrets. Tonight, I have two guests. I have Rick Hidalgo of Blog Talk Radio's The House of Hidalgo. Welcome, Rick.
Thank you for having me, Stephen.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I have the lovely and talented Jillian Trebilcock. Hello, Jill.
Hi, Stephen.
The lovely and talented.
So talented. But what my talents are has to remain one of those secrets yet to be unraveled.
Unraveled, yes. Yeah. Well, guys, we've got so many subjects we can touch upon tonight. Me and Rick spoke earlier. We thought about, what did we think about, Rick? I've forgotten already.
Well, Stephen, I think we hit on so many different subjects that we've confused ourselves.
Yeah, we did. There's so many directions we can go in. A lot of them are just nothing but big distractions to me. To a lot of other people, they seem to be life-threatening and life or death situations. But I don't know. They just don't seem to be on my radar too much. There are too many very important subjects that need to be looked at more than Benghazi or Iran or Syria or Russia or whomever. Those things just don't really seem to matter to me. I explained something to Rick. A couple of friends really seemed to get upset with me when they asked me what I thought about some of these things, and I told them that I thought they were nothing but distractions, and that's what I do. I just think that they're nothing but distractions, because you have to follow the money. If some of these things are created by the bankers or the governments, they're just nothing but distractions because they are created. I don't even want to bother with them if they're not created by the power structure. If they are created by the power structure, I just don't care to discuss them. They're just not on my radar. there's not really a solution in talking about these things.
What is on your radar?
What is on my radar?
What's on your radar today?
Well, the same thing that's on my radar every day, bringing down the system, pulling out that one single card that will bring the House of Cards down. Mm. I'd love to find that. But what was the particular subject we were thinking about, though, Rick?
Well, you know, Stephen, there is so many different areas of distraction. And I think one of the chief areas of distraction we were talking about was this whole mess with the Gaza Strip and
the
Palestinians versus the, Israelis.
The Khazarians, yeah.
Yeah, and the very many opinions that there are out there concerning, you know, this particular issue. But really, bottom line is there's people dying. And that's really what we have to focus on, and you know, in what ways can we affect change and get people to actually pick up a book and study for themselves the real true origins of these things.
Right. Yeah. Israel became a state in, I think, what was it, 1948?
Right.
And that is not terribly a long, long time ago. I mean, there are people on this planet right now, and they've been interviewed. I've seen some of these interviews. They tell that these so-called Israelis and the Palestinians lived like brother at one time, and it hasn't been really, really a long time ago. As I happen to mention, they lived like brothers, and the bankers stick their nose in and create havoc, and now they're not.
Right. You know, Stephen, I've been doing a little further study because my religious background would tend to tell me to favor one side over the other. However, as I've come to be a very self-educated person, somebody who likes to look into things before I take someone's word for it, you ever heard of Benjamin Friedman, Stephen?
Yes, I have.
Well, Benjamin Friedman has a number of great speeches on YouTube that you can look up his name, Benjamin Friedman, and you'll get a great number of hits. And he really does a lot to expose the true identity of these of this nation of Israel, and exactly who these people are. The idea behind them being quote unquote Jews and what that means. He goes a long way to exposing those things, and I think it's worth everyone's listen. So you can just get people to go to YouTube and type in Benjamin Friedman and listen to that one time. I think we'd at least start to engage people in the right direction.
You're saying the right direction? Sorry, go on.
There are a lot of long presentations that he gives, mainly back in the 60s, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe.
Yeah.
Right in that 61 to 63 time frame.
Very interesting. I haven't seen a lot of his presentations or anything, but go into more detail on what he explains, Rick.
Well, you know, I think you know, it would be great if people would go off on their own journeys to explore this, but let's just take a couple things. For one, he explains the background story of World War One and how the different players in World War One came to the point of engaging in the war itself. And he exposes certain contracts or certain covenants that these Khazar Jews, is what he calls them, came to agreements with certain governments that if you'll allow us to inhabit this piece of land over here, we'll bring the United States into the war. There's a lot of very interesting tie-ins all the way around that thing, which led to the demise of the nation of Germany. They went into terrible, terrible times, which of course led into the regime of Adolf Hitler, and you know, the whole idea of having to come out of that hole that they had dug for themselves in the first war. That gave rise to this gentleman, Hitler, and we all know what happened there. So it's just a very interesting research that I think that we should all engage in and come up with a you know, our own personal opinion on that. And I think we'll all start to realize that there's more to this than what meets the eye.
Yeah, probably so. Jill, didn't you ask me a few days ago what the reason why I thought Israel was bombing Palestine?
Yep.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Stephen?
Well, do you remember what I told you?
There's rule by America.
No. it goes deeper than America. It's got older European families are in control. Some we know, and probably some that we don't know. I'm sure that there are families out there that are in control that we don't know of. I mean, we've all heard of the families that do exert a lot of the control system, like the Rhodes family, the Warburg family, the Rothschild family, the Rockefeller family, the Bush family. But I'm almost positive, and I would like to talk to some people that do a lot of research on some of the families that we don't know of yet.
Well, interestingly enough, Benjamin Freeman said the United States, which is run by, you know, the Rockefellers and those people, was not in the war. And this is 2 years after the war. This is what Benjamin Friedman said. Thank you very much, Rick. That the United, that pretty well England, had to give in, that Germany had won the war after 2 years. And they said to England, we will guarantee to bring you the United States into the war as your ally to fight with you on your side. If you will promise us Palestine, sign after you win the war. Mm-hmm. In other words, they made this deal. We will get the United States into this war as your ally. The price you have to pay is Palestine after you've won the war and defeated Germany, Austria, mm-hmm. Hungary, and Turkey. So America wanted Palestine. Why does America want Palestine?
It's not so much America wanted Palestine. It's the, I think it's the Khazarian Jews that wield a lot of control, wanted to give the illusion that America's pulling the strings.
And what was really interesting to add to that is if you do some further study, there's some evidence that points to the fact that there was a window of time in the Nazi regime of Hitler that he opened the door to any Jew who wanted to move to Palestine. He gave them that opportunity to do so. Now, do I have that documentation right in front of me available that I can share on this particular show? No, I do not. But if people would be willing to research it and find it out, I did run across that, and I think it's very compelling, and it's an interesting story. It, you know, is it possible that this man who has been, let's just put it out there as it is. I mean, this guy's been vilified. He's a monster.
Right? You see, Joe.
Yeah, we're talking about Hitler here, okay? Okay, he's a monster. He killed all these we've heard it all. We've heard all the stories.
Do you know why we actually had World War II?
No, yeah. I don't know anything.
Because World War I was not a success. After the end of World War I, they tried to start the League of Nations, and it was blocked on every single corner of the world. Every single faction of the United States and a lot of European countries blocked the League of Nations. The League of Nations was the first try in World War I of what we now know as the United Nations after World War II. Germany was the bad guy in both wars, and they were picked to be the bad guy in both wars. But the First World War didn't get the job done.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And part of that job was getting as many of these Khazars over into Palestine, because we see now what the fruit of that labor is that, you know, the entire genocide of an entire people. And, you know, we've heard all the rhetoric out there about the Palestinians. They aren't even a true people. We've heard all this kind of rhetoric, but they're people. I mean, these are human beings. They bleed just like we do, and they're being absolutely massacred on an equitable level. What the damage they do to Israel is totally unequitable to what's happening in the little tiny piece that there is left of Palestine.
Oh, they're just mad. They're just all bloody mad. It's all about brutality. I just don't understand why they're so basic. I mean, I do understand why they're so basic, but it's just so basic. I mean, it's absolutely got nothing to do with humanity. And, it's just sickening that it's being, that people are being pitted against each other. And as I was saying to Stephen, it's sort of good for the Muslim hatred that's been going on in the world. I mean, that's one good mm-hmm. thing that's coming out of it. You know, everybody hates Muslims. Now everyone hates Jews. Will they hate Muslims and Jews, or are they suddenly starting to like the Muslims? You know, it's just ridiculous.
Well, oddly enough, the Palestinians, they're actually Arab. Did you know that, Jill?
Yeah.
Okay. And actually, oddly enough, the Arabs don't hate the Jews. I'm sorry. The Arabs hate other Arabs worse than what they hate the Jews. Like the Sunnis hate the Shia more than what they hate the Jews. The Sunnis hate the Shia more than what they hate Americans. That hatred is a lot worse.
And listen to the word. This is the word. This is hatred. And what is hatred?
Yes.
Hatred is anger with the intention to cause harm. You know, how can you create world peace when you're operating from anger with the intention to cause harm?
Yes, exactly. I don't know.
You're mad. That's all I have to say. That's my whole sentence for the whole thing. They're all mad.
Yes, well, a lot of people are mad. There's, I think, well over 7.3 billion people on the planet, and many of them are mad. By the way, I picked up the People's Internet Radio stream there also, so we're out there in Ireland right now too.
Hello, Ireland.
Scotland, UK, elsewhere. Yes, welcome everyone.
Welcome, universe.
Yeah, Jill. You know, we're all about solutions oriented radio. What do you think a solution is to stop this madness?
I think the solution is to contemplate the humanity in every person. Like, one way of looking at it is, are people actually born into a religion or born with a religion? Like, I mean, this is looking at it from a religious point of view. I mean, I think that the Palestinians should be given more land, for one thing. I think it's ridiculous that that the Jews have gone and taken their land.
Well, they had plenty of land back in 1967.
this is all being done by politicians for some reason, and I'm still trying to work out why. I still don't understand why they put up these walls. I mean, the Gaza Strip, I mean, this is an incredibly small piece of land.
Yes. Well, the ultimate goal is they have to create a race war. Karl Marx said it too, but Albert Pike said it in his book, that they had to create a race war. And then they had to create a one world religion after this race war.
Oh, I see. Oh, maybe it'll be Buddhism. That won't be so bad.
No, I seriously can't imagine that being it, but
They got the Dalai Lama to open Congress recently, but what will that do to their Satanism? See, Buddhists don't like Satanism.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why they're going after the Tibetan monks all the time, right?
Well, the Chinese are after the Tibetan monks.
Yeah, Chinese, okay. You say Chinese, I say European elite. They're being controlled also, Jill, so...
Okay. Don't let that fool you. Yes, sorry. Go on, what?
You know, there's another piece to this too that's really disturbing to me is as a man who gets up on Sunday mornings and preaches out of the Bible. I have a little bit of a hard time with those who constantly want to make this into a Christian versus Muslim or whatever other kind of war we want to make it. Because to me, so many people who consider themselves "quote unquote" Christian just blindly have faith in Israel as if it's part of what you're supposed to do as a Christian. And the fact of the matter is that land that is called Israel today, that nation that's called Israel today, is so far from any bloodline that would be even considered remotely Hebrew. That I don't understand the correlation. I think it's something that's being propagandized to the church so that we will be part of this structure of war, this crazy religious idiocy that's happening today, and it's unfortunate.
Comments, Jill?
Sorry, I had my speaker turned off because I was typing. Okay, so what I have to say about that is. Well, you can tie that to sovereignty, can't you? I mean, like the Jews sort of did have that sort of relationship to Jesus there. Like Jesus was born there. But I don't know. It's sort of really weird because I know the Muslims accepted Jesus as a prophet. And so there shouldn't actually be sort of any problem there. I mean, whatever problems are created, I think that because they're a step away from the essence of the religion. Like I agree. I mean, there were a lot of Jewish people there.
Oh, Muslims still do recognize Jesus as a great prophet. They just don't recognize him as the Son of God.
Right.
As the
Messiah.
As the Messiah. Yes.
Right.
Many.
They do. They recognize him as a Messiah, don't they?
No. They just recognize him as a great prophet. Yeah.
Right. Well, what's the difference between a prophet and a Messiah?
A prophet is just a teacher.
Right.
A Messiah is the savior.
Oh, I see. Well, Jesus wasn't the savior for the Muslims, just the same as Muhammad wasn't the savior for the Buddhists or for the, That's a reasonable thing. But they all did sort of get along, and they sort of respected each other's words. And if we could bring it back to that, and that's what all the multi-faith people are trying to do at the moment, you know, all around the world, all the peacemakers are saying, let's not talk about what we have different, but let's talk about what we have in common. And we have so much in common, and especially when we focus on what it is that we have in common, and that is our humanity and our compassion. Like, we all have, you know, human qualities, and we all have an incredible amount of compassion and that sort of spiritual aspect to us. And I think that's closest to the solution. Can you hear my dog snoring? Just listen to this. Knows he's a dog. It woke him up. He was roaring away there. He's a roaring snorer.
Yeah. Did you do that, Rick, on Facebook there?
Did I do what on Facebook?
I was talking to Rick there for a second.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not on Facebook at the moment.
Matters of Broadcasting. I wonder who that is. That's pretty
wild. You know how I have a Clayton's toy boy?
Excuse me?
You know Andrew, my Clayton's toy
boy. Oh, yes. Okay. The walking erection.
Yeah. He's just sent me a message saying that he wants to come up and go and pick up my potbelly stove. So I mightn't stay.
What's he going to do with your potbelly stove?
He's going to put it in for me.
Oh, what? Okay. Okay.
He's a builder. But is anyway, we'll see what happens. So I've just, that's what I was typing, saying, yes, 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 I'll do that for sure.
Okay.
So anyway, so back to where we were. Look, it's a really important thing. And I know so many Christians and so many people who, and I've got a Buddhist friend who, They hate Muslims, right? I've got a Christian friend and a Buddhist friend who hate Muslims, and I just think they can't claim their spirituality. They lose it. They go down in my eyes as soon as they start hating people like this. Like, well, I can't see why, you know, if you're going to be a truly spiritual person, then you connect heart to heart with other people, and you recognize the differences. Can actually, like, you and I are going to do a show together, Rick, and I said, let's extract the essence of God, you know. Buddhists don't believe in that concept, God, Tibetan Buddhists, but I was reared a Christian, Church of England. So what I learned once I became a Buddhist, but I may or may not have learned it without studying Tibetan Buddhism, was how to extract the essence of all the religions. And the essence is, you know, that we all have beautiful, compassionate, clear-like natures, God-like natures. And that's what we need to be doing. And all the rest, I think, is that people are just too tied up in this material sort of earthly attitude that's completely, like you said, follow the money, Stephen, you know, or the kudos or the power.
Well, I can't.
That's always the problem.
I can't repeat it too many times.
No, you can't. I think, so do it again.
Well, I believe the answer is get away from our current monetary system. You take money out of the picture, and then you will probably take greed out of the picture. You will probably take envy out of the picture.
Well, let's keep in mind that money in itself as a medium of exchange isn't really the problem. I mean, as sovereign people, we have to have a way to be able to trade with one another.
Okay.
I have something and you have something, we have a medium of exchange. You and I agree that bananas is our medium of exchange. So we exchange bananas for apples. Okay. That's no problem.
Sure. Okay.
But the love of money, now that's a problem. You get to the point where you have so much passion and so much drive for that medium of exchange that you get greedy with your brother. You get greedy to the point where, okay, look, I want one more banana for those apples. Okay, now that's inequitable. Why can't we just live as true sovereigns and exchange, you know, equally with one another? It's when that usury or when that profit comes in that all of a sudden now we have greed, now we have wars, now we have Illuminati who want to collect, and we have elite. We have people who want to and sometimes I'm not sure they're people, Stephen and Jill. Well, sometimes I think these guys are just utter demons.
I think they're people. It's just I think that they've been inbred for so long, for so many generations, there's been inbreeding, keeping it in the family, so to speak, keeping the money in the family, keeping the power in the family, that Well, just basically, these people actually think that they're special, and they actually think that they're better than the rest of us. And that's the main problem.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I think I'm the Incredible Hulk, Stephen.
Yeah.
That's kind of special.
Especially back when you was in the ring, right?
Yes.
What was your name in the ring there, Rick?
I went by T3. T3. That was, Tiny Thump Thomas.
Oh.
Yeah.
He was a American wrestler one time there, Jill, on the amateur level.
I still have my equipment, and my dream one day is to go out and do it for a much different purpose.
Right.
But this,
Well, so. You're not a kid anymore, though, Rick.
No, I'm not. No, not a kid anymore.
I've got a little song here that you can play while we're talking about Palestine.
What song is that?
If you want one. It's called The Peace Anthem for Palestine by Tim Minchin.
Well, you'll have to pass it to
what?
Me.
Yeah, I'll get it for you now. The other thing is I'll talk to you in the ad break. I'll talk to you in the ad. Oh, no, I'll say it now. I decided last week I want to do a show each week on the seven deadly sins. So maybe that's what we'll start on Sunday night, Rick.
Well, that's only going to be seven shows then, Jill.
I'm going to have a panel on each one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I want to have three or four people, but I'll get them from – different. I've just written the wrong thing here. Look, I'm completely nuts. I've written seven deadly sins for Tim Minchin. What was I going to get? Tim Minchin and what?
I don't know.
I'm just here for light entertainment, everybody. Don't take me too seriously. I'm going to get Tim Minchin on. Oh, yes, the Palestine. Look here, Tim Minchin's an absolute card. Hang on. Here we go. Hang on.
Is it dirty like the other Tim Minchin?
No, it's not dirty.
I was going to say, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, I am too. But she got a phone call there, so she'll be away for a few seconds. But, I'm not sure about the other song that I heard, but I'm not going to play that here.
Our friends in the European islands might enjoy that song, Stephen.
Probably so. Well, I don't know. I don't know if you can take the monetary system out, Rick. I would surely like to try.
Well,
if I could have access to, if I could grow my own food, get access to clean water and shelter, I would get out of the system.
Well, Stephen, this is what I tell people, and the crowd that I hang with is tending to get bigger and bigger all the time. But this is what I tell people. We have two options. Option number one is we, the people, get together and do what we have to do. Get our government back, reorganize it, ratify it, bring it into submission, make it do what it's supposed to do. And that's it. And then we start operating as sovereign men and women. Just that simple. Okay, that's option one. Option two is we separate from the system completely. And we live in our own separate communities. We have examples of that, microscopic examples like the Amish people here in America. Now that's a bad example because remember they've filed a religious exemption, which puts them back into the ball court of the same fraud that everybody else is having to deal with, this corporate government. But those are our two options. As far as I see it, we either get together as we the people and take care of business and get this done, or option number two is we just completely separate ourselves. We can't get on a Mayflower and go across the ocean because there's no new lands. So we're going to have to do one or the other.
Yeah, I say the latter.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean to laugh there because I agree with you. I think that's probably going to end up being what it is because so many distractions, so many directions. People, we can't seem to get anything going without being infiltrated. What happens is that we're so polarized. Look at this Israel-Palestine thing.
Well, the reason I say the latter, Rick, is because you can go through your head on every single scenario that there possibly could be, and I have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And somebody who has mental disease, mental disorders such as narcissism and sociopath and psychopathy, sociopathy and psychopathy. I don't see them relinquishing any control without a struggle. And that means another violent revolution. And that's not anything I want to see.
Right. Well, you know what I've always said, right, Stephen? If I had money to invest right now, I would invest in industrial hemp.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And the reason why is because you can make a lot of rope out of it, and I think rope is going to be in demand.
Very possibly. But, you know, we can use the rope over and over and over again. So. It's not like we got to build new nooses or anything like that.
Right.
Jill, you still there?
I'm still here. I'm on the phone.
Okay.
But let's play that song, Peace Anthem for Palestine, if you want to.
Oh, okay. Do you want to play it now?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Well, we have to mute because this is a YouTube video.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Palestine, eh? Things are really bad up there. The Muslim and the Jewish people don't seem to get along very well in Israel and Palestine. And it's the crazy thing is the circular nature of the violence. Like every act of violence is just revenge for a previous act, and in turn begets another act. And it's hard to imagine how there's ever going to be a lasting peace in the region, you know, because the circular and self-perpetuating nature of the violence. And I was thinking about this the other day, and I thought maybe the solution's not going to be one of these huge solutions that are sort of mooted in the paper each day. Maybe it won't be a military intervention or God forbid, or a geographical thing or a diplomatic solution. Maybe what it's going to be is like a seed. Like maybe peace has to come like from a peace seed that. Like someone plants in the region and it grows into a tree of peace with branches that reach out over the whole region, over both Israel and Palestine, shadowing it with its peace branches. It's the metaphor. Anyway, I was thinking about this. Sorry, I just got the giggles. I was thinking about this, and I thought maybe this seed, like maybe all they need is a really good peace anthem. So I've taken the liberty of penning a little something, and I thought it would be wise to bounce it off a relatively impartial crowd here in my home country before I actually pop over there and start busking on the Gaza Strip. So this is my peace anthem for Palestine. Obviously, being an anthem, there'll be opportunity towards the end for you to sing along, if you know the words. It seems it's been that way forever. So if you don't eat pigs, and we don't eat pigs, why not eat pigs together? Pigs. Seems it's been that way forever. So if you don't eat pigs, we don't eat pigs. Why not eat pigs together?
Why not not eat pigs together? Why not? Why not not eat pigs together? One more time. Why not? Yeah. Why not rock?
Well, that was quite interesting there, Jill.
Very philosophical.
Yeah.
I thought you'd enjoy it. But he's so funny, though. He's so clever.
Well, the only thing I have to say here, guys, is I cannot be the one to broker this piece because I do eat pigs.
I do, too.
Well, you could give up eating pigs for the sake of peace and the pigs. I mean, you know, this is not beyond the realm of possibilities, Rick.
I just had some pig for dinner tonight, Jill. I had some sausage.
So did I.
I had some sausage. Mm.
But, you know, it's terribly horrible of us to eat pigs. But anyway, this is a whole new topic. Because if I was a pig, I would not want you to eat me. Not at all.
I think it's quite opposite. I think pigs beg to be eaten.
Oh, you're mad. You can't say that. You can't say pigs are meant to eat.
Well, I don't know. When I hear bacon sizzling, it calls my name. Doesn't it too, Stephen?
Yes, it does.
We have to play that other song next. If you call out my name, then you know wherever I am, I'll
come. We're not even supposed to play songs on this network, Jill.
Aren't we?
No.
Oh, but the thing is, legally, they're on YouTube. So and Tim Minchin would love it. He would just love anything because he's just that kind of guy.
Oh, yeah.
So you won't get in any trouble with Tim Minchin. But once they're on YouTube, then you can play them.
No, you can't.
Why not?
Because everything is on YouTube. Mm. Whether
That's not a very good argument. That one doesn't win.
Whether the artist wants it on there or not, it's on there.
Oh, I see.
Because the artist, whoever makes the song or writes it or sings it, somebody will put it up on YouTube. And if they try to get it taken down, somebody else will just put it back up.
Stephen, perhaps to save our tails from some legal trouble here, we should mention the gentleman's name. What was his name?
Tim Minchin.
Tim Minchin gets a mention.
Tim Minchin. That was just for you, Tim Minchin.
Tim Minchin, thank you so much.
Yes. Promoting Indeed. Tim Minchin.
Oh, look, everybody, go to YouTube, Google Tim Minchin. He's fantastic. I really like his one on sacredness, too. I was looking at that one today. That was good. He does lots of things. He's got the Quran. He gets the Quran and Harry Potter, and he switches the covers of the book, and then he pulls the essence out of the book, and, you know.
Do you know what? I was sitting there watching that video, Jill, and, you know, do you know who he looked like to me?
No.
Oh, boy, here we go.
He looked like Beetlejuice.
He does look like Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Beetlejuice,
yeah. What was his name? I've forgotten it already now. But he looked just like him.
He does. You mean, he's absolutely mad.
He's got the curly hair and a clown-looking face.
Oh, check. Go ahead and mute for a minute there, Rick, and check out the video yourself. Me and Jill will talk.
Yeah, I'll have to.
He teases his hair, and he has black eyeliner around his eyes.
Yeah, he's got everything except for the white makeup and the little black stripes or whatever it was. But I was just sitting there. I'm trying to think of the actor's name now, but I can't.
We can't say Beetlejuice three times.
No,
because
you
otherwise
can't.
We've done it thrice, and we might get one.
We'll turn into something, won't we?
I think you're right.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I see a little Jack Sparrow there, too.
Yeah. goodness. I wonder if that was on purpose or something.
I'd do a whole show on Tim Minchin if I could.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. M-I-N-C-H-I-N or E-N? How do you spell Minchin?
I don't know. You're the one that gave it to me.
Well, it's on the screen there. It's M-I-N-C-H-I-N, Minchin.
I've already gotten rid of the radio, the video.
Where's this guy from?
He's Australian, of course. Isn't he? Yeah.
Australian, okay.
Yeah. We had the maddest people? Comedians. Like, look at Dame Edna Everage.
Who?
Dame Edna Everage. If you haven't heard of Dame Edna, you've heard of nothing.
Edna. Yeah, your friend, isn't it?
No. My friend is not famous like Dame Edna. Dame Edna Everage is Barry Humphries.
Oh, I thought that was Sue. I thought that was Sue's character.
Yeah, wow. No, Sue's character is Edith Wise.
Yeah, but doesn't she have a Dame character or something? Or
it's no, she's like a cross between Dame Edna Everage and some other weirdo.
Oh, okay.
Man, you guys are way over my head.
Well, there's this actress that doesn't live too far from Jill. Jill met her at a rally one time and talked her into coming on the radio, and she's been a hoot. She's
embarrassing hoot.
Oh, an embarrassing hoot. Had that, yes.
I mean, I have to say the only experience I've had with Australia, on YouTube, would be your version of Australia's Got Talent. I have seen some clips.
Well, Sue is.
Sue's in a class of herself.
Yes. Yeah, she has trouble with all sorts of things. I can't even tell you what she says. You'd have to warm the audience up to it. You need a warm up for Sue. She's not her. She's got two characters.
And you would need a disclaimer too, Rick.
You'd need a disclaimer. They were actually People's Internet Radio was saying, "God, Jill, watch it. You better get off. You better get her off." And then Vin came in and said, "No, let her go."
Yeah.
She was going through menopause and she was going to cryo vac her menstrual blood. She was revolting. Wow. She ran a mug. I know. She's just hilarious. She's just turned 70, this actress. She's quite a leading actress. And she's just way too witty for words. In fact, if I could get her on Seven Deadly Sins, that would be fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, your show you're going to have?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm just typing to her now. I want to do Seven Deadly Sins with me.
Were you about to say something, Rick?
So I'm just curious, you know, being in Australia, I mean, is there anything relevant going on in Australia right now that, you know, that you could share with us?
That's a terrible question to ask me because, you see, I'm actually like the ultimate sovereign. I don't, in as much as I'm completely disconnected from the world in far too many ways. I don't read the newspaper. I don't watch the news. I haven't got a clue what's going on in Australia, but I'll Google it for you.
Oh, okay. Well, that's actually a good answer.
And she actually knows more about American politics than what she does Australian politics. And she doesn't know much about American politics.
No, I know.
She passed the test. It was a test.
Bring her to the community, right, Rick?
There you go. You're in.
I joined it. I've been there all my life. I think I'm a natural sovereign. Well, anyway, I am. I just am. I stopped voting when I was 21 because I voted at 18. I grew up in a very salubrious suburb called Toorak, which is about in the most expensive street in Melbourne, St. George's Road, Toorak. It's like the street to live in. Everybody's there, like the Bay, just everybody, right? Like it's a very, 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 very wealthy street. And I went to, you know, the best school in Melbourne, Melbourne Church of England Girls Grammar School, so-called the best, you know, the most expensive. I don't know. But anyway, I just went to a private girls' school. But I also had a very eclectic sort of upbringing because I went to Wrighton Church of England Girls Grammar School for the first 3 years of my life. And then my father retired and we moved to the farm. And we lived on the farm until I was 15. And then we moved back to the city we went to a couple of places first, but then we ended up in St. George's Road. And then I went off to, you know, this school. And so my sociology teacher actually lived next door to one of the future Prime Minister of Australia, who was a real sort of radical, who was the head of the trade unions, called Bob Hawke. So I got a bit of a leftish sort of a thing. And then we had this Prime Minister called John Gordon, who I thought I liked because he'd been shot down in the war and his face had all been stuck back together again. by this famous surgeon called Strzelecki or something. Anyway, then a few people did a few dumb things, and I thought, oh, these politicians lie to you. Because my father, you know, brought me up to be a very right-wing voter, and then my first boyfriend was a very left-wing voter. And so I suddenly realized that I couldn't work it out and that I never actually would, because the politicians were always lying anyway. And then we had a politician who became the Prime Minister called Gough Whitlam, and he spent a lot of money and did a lot of amazing things, gave us free university and also free education, and did a lot of wonderful things for Australia. And so the Governor General and the head of the other party, Malcolm Fraser, decided to sack him. And so our Prime Minister got sacked. So I went and voted again for Gough Whitlam, just because I didn't like the way they'd sacked him. And I didn't even know if I'd done the right thing then. And I was 21. And I really voted for a friend of mine who was an illegal immigrant called Salvador, whose real name was Heinchi, from Switzerland. And I said, well, Sal, you're so passionate about this, I'll vote for Gough Whitlam for you. And so we're going back way, you know, in the 70s. And then I kept moving around so much that I ended up not being on any electoral roll, and I managed never to get back on. And I thought, well, I can't vote for any of you anyway, because you're all mad. So I haven't voted since I was 21. And I'm really old now, so you just give up. I gave up voting very, 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 very long time ago. And that's it. But I'm actually a bit short on conversation, which, you know, like, I can't talk politics very well. But I really did like a lot of things about American politics in terms of the Constitution. It was a pretty fabulous Constitution, but then it's got all these stupid amendments in it, which bugger it up a lot. It's the same with the Irish Constitution. I'm starting to learn about the Irish Constitution. The 1937 one, is that the best one?
No, that was the 1919.
Oh, well, something good happened in 19—yeah, the 1919 one's an important one, and then something happened in 1939.
Yeah.
37. Anyway, I mean, you know, all these original constitutions that are for the people and of the people, and then I got into community rights, which I'm very passionate about, and that's another American guy who we spoke to who wasn't as he appeared. But he, community rights is really important. And then I'm a sociologist. So I sort of ended up deciding that the most important thing really is community rights and that every person is treated as a sovereign individual with respect. And I think that's the closest to the perfect politics. And so if they brought what they've got in Switzerland, direct democracy, where they have citizen initiated referendum, I think that's a really good idea. Except there is one glitch to it, and that is, if you've got a whole lot of boneheads in your community and they all want to vote, that they bring in, you know, some sort of mine, because they think they'll give people some jobs, and instead you're ripping up, you know, something really precious, you know, then it loses its power again. Yeah, go on.
Do you hear the words "burn right the heron" all the time from Vin and them? The Constitution of Ireland, enacted by the people 1st of July, 1937. In operation as from the 29th of December, 1937. First right. Amendment was in 1939.
Right. Yeah. What was that First Amendment?
First Amendment was extended to conflicts in which a state is not a participant. The provision for a state of emergency to secure the public safety and preservation of the state in a time of war or armed rebellion.
I'm not sure what that means. Well, see, that's what's really interesting about Ireland. It supposedly has the constitution to make it it only has a provisional government in at the moment, and it is supposedly
kind of like ours, Rick.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
A provisional de facto government.
Is that what you've got?
Well, yeah.
Really, everybody does.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, that is exactly how it is all around the world.
Yeah, Jill, me and Rick were talking about this earlier, before we got to the show. The American Constitution, they swear an oath to it. I can bring one of these up because I played it for somebody else the other day on Skype. I'm going to go ahead and find one here. But anyways, the POTUS, President of the United States, is supposed to swear to the Constitution of the United States of America, but each and every one of them swears an oath to the Constitution to the United States. And the United States is only one single piece of land, which is 10 square miles. And that's where D.C. is at. That's why.
What if you never swear? What if you never swear allegiance to it?
What if who never swears allegiance to what?
The United States.
Well, he's specifically talking about an oath by an officer of the Constitution. That's what he's specifically talking about.
The Constitution clearly says, or the original one, you can't find one a copy on the internet that actually says it correctly. It is supposed to be the Constitution of the United States of America. That is all 50 states. But what it only says and what they swear to is the Constitution of the United States. They leave out the America, and that's the semantics where that comes in. The Constitution means and protects none of us.
The Constitution protects none of us.
Yes, over here in America anyways. And your Constitution is probably the same. It doesn't protect you.
Well, it's just completely ignored. You know, as if it doesn't exist, because it's a whole separate. Because we're not supposed to have a democracy here.
Because of one single word, Joe. Yeah.
You know, this we weren't given a democracy. Article 4, Section 4 of our Constitution guarantees us a republican form of government. A republican form of government has nothing to do with a democracy. And these days we operate as a democracy in everything we do. And it really, we could go on about this subject for absolute hours.
A republican form of government. It's all very confusing, but maybe, you know, this is sort of my mature age learning curve, you know.
Not a republican form, a republic form of government.
No, it says a republican form of government.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah, it says a republican form of government. And the separation between what a republican form of government is defined within the entire Constitution, and you have to really pay attention to the upper cases and the lower cases of the different pieces of the Bill of Rights. You know, all that is very we're really dumbed down and we're miseducated here in the United States, and I'm sure all around the world.
Well, the thing is, what I've learned from the community rights movement in America is that they gave corporations personhood, and that's what really buggered everything up.
Right.
Was when they gave corporations personhood, and I believe that happened, but I might be wrong. When the guy, you're gone.
No. See, that's just the thing is, you'll have different people who will come in and pick one particular thing and say that this is the real bugaboo. This is the thing that really affected, you know, everything. It's just been a slow, steady process, one thing after another. And I'm not sure that there is one little element that you can point to and say this is what caused it. You know, it's just been it's been a backwards motion for years and years and years. For so long, and that's just the thing is we've got so many people focused on so many different things that there is no no unity. We're all divided. We're all on different sides of all these different issues.
Yeah.
Oh, hey guys, we need to actually take a real station break here. We're just a couple minutes overdue here, so we'll be right back here, everyone.
Mental disorders are common in the United States and internationally. An estimate 26.2% of Americans ages 18 and older suffer from some sort of mental illness. Now, this figure translates to 57.7 million people who suffer from some sort of mental breakdown. If you find yourself laying in bed on a Sunday night, hearing voices while you're trying to sleep, well, it might not be that demonic being from another dimension trying to kill you where you sleep. Might just be your mental illness starting to kick in. So if you're out of meds for the night, then I have just the thing. Come listen to my show, The Jackal's Head. You can check out our Listen Live page only on www.psn-radio.com. See you there. This ad has been paid for by The Jackal's Head and the War on Terror.
War. It's fantastic.
...4,734 UFO sightings in 2007. before abductions by aliens or unknown species reported by American and British citizens, and hundreds more unreported in 2007. Suppressed information about collisions with passenger aircraft and UFOs that has been kept from the public knowledge for years, and only one trusted source of information from some of the top UFO researchers in the world. Exclusive information that cannot be found anywhere else on the planet. Trusted, connected, accurate. TheUFOStore.com. Expand your personal library with fast shipping and instant downloadable information from the largest selection of UFO products on the internet by going to TheUFOStore.com or call on the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week order line at 541-523-2630. The truth is out there, and TheUFOStore.com has it.
Free stuff for you just for listening to this station.
Yo, we got your attention?
Here's how it works. You click on the radio loyalty banner right now and sign up. Then you keep on listening like you already do. But now you earn points. Those points add up, and you can trade them in for cool stuff in the radio loyalty store. Earn more points by sharing your station with friends on Facebook and Twitter, answering surveys, and by using the apps in the New Players App Store. Pretty simple. Free stuff just for doing what you already do. Radio loyalty. Click the banner to join now.
There's a war going on in the streets. It's the War on Thirst. Splunk is winning the War on Thirst with the new grenade-shaped cans.
Hey, yo, pull the pin and blow your thirst right off in that brand-new taste explosion.
Boom! Now that's the sound of refreshment. Sprunk. Go AWOL from the Cola Wars with an energizing mix of lemon, lime, 10 times the caffeine and sugar.
Plus, mercury and benzene for the extra pop.
Yo, it'll bring the temperature right up and the bubbles. Other beverages use carbon dioxide. We use ether to kick up that fizz. Thanks to all that mercury, you won't remember anything that tasted so good. Now pick up a Sprunk Thermonuclear 6-pack. Kill thirst and liven up the party. Toss your friends a Sprunk in the grenade-shaped can and enter the Sprunk sweepstakes where you can win a real case of grenade. Blow your thirst right off in that brand new taste explosion.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top of that thing.
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You're listening to PSN Radio, the best in talk radio anywhere on the internet.
Time to go mobile.
All right, and we're back from the break here. I know that seemed like quite a long break, and I needed to take a little bit of a break there, so we are back. I still have Rick Hidalgo of House of Hidalgo, Blog Talk Radio, and Jill Trebilcock. What were we talking about during the break? I missed about 2.5 minutes of it. First, guys, let me. I want to play this oath here, and then we can hear what they actually swear to. So, give me about a minute of mute here.
Okay.
And I'll play Bubba's oath.
I, William Jefferson Clinton, do solemnly swear.
I, William Jefferson Clinton, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
And will to the best of my ability.
And will to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Yippee, yay, 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 yippee. But it clearly, yeah. He clearly swears an oath to the President of the United States. And not to the President of the United States of America, at which he should. And that's brings up another interesting thing there, Rick. On Wednesday, I will be having on my People's Internet Radio show an author and a scholar and a researcher of 50 plus years. He's going to tell us a lot of things that a lot of people don't know about the Constitution and where and what went wrong. So let's continue on with what was being discussed during the break there.
Oh, well, I'm this is just a horrible thing. You see, it's the Pope. It's the Vatican.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah. And how, like, mad they all seem to be. And how the last Pope, I mean, and Kevin Annett. And the Brussels, what's it called, Stephen?
The ITCCS.
The ITTCS.
ITCCS.
IT.
Yeah, just call them the tribunal.
Well, are they real? Like, what authority do they actually have?
Yeah, go ahead and explain that to us, Rick. You know a lot more about than I do.
Wow. Okay, yeah. Okay, well, let me ask you this, Jill. What authority do you believe that you would have over, say, the Pope? See, I didn't mean. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, Jill. But this is just the essence. This is just the essence of the question. You're asking a question. What kind of authority does this ITCCS have over the Pope? Well, I suppose if you want to look at it as some kind of organization, you know, we could criticize it all day long and say that they don't have any authority over the Pope. Sure, if we want to. However, a group of people. I'll call them brave people, and they are a group of people because I know several of them are, and they're individually different people. They're not the same as some accusations have come out and said that they're the same person using different names. But I know several of them personally and have met them personally, and I can say that they are not the same people. However, you have a group of people who have come together and formed a tribunal, okay, and they've taken their own sovereignty, their own oath, and they've placed it on the line, and they've brought in people to testify on behalf of, you know, this particular case that they have against the Pope, the Queen, and, you know, several other named people, and they're having people come in and testify and give and bear witness to all these things. That sounds like a tribunal. It sounds like how a court would operate. Is it a court of a particular country? No. But, you know, do we get justice in courts of particular countries? I don't think we do. We've seen over and over again how they're used to traffic the very same children that are used in these ritualistic, satanic rituals. You know, during the break, there was a question that came out. We were talking about, do we think that the Pope actually, you know, ritualistically rapes and murders children?
Can I add something here, Rick?
Go ahead.
I have to ask you a question, Joe. If you were to run for office, like say mayor of Dalesford, mm-hmm. and you were to get elected, you would have to swear an oath on whatever that happens to be that you would have to swear an oath on to serve as mayor. Well, these people also have to swear an oath to a particular idealism that they are going to seek truth and justice. And
the American way.
Isn't that what they're doing, Rick?
You're talking about the tribunal, Stephen?
Yes.
Right. You know, they've taken what they've learned. They've taken a common law handbook, and I'm not here to determine whether their particular version of the common law is right or wrong. That's not what this is about.
But they've
taken a manual and they put it together and they said, this is how we're going to operate. And they've invited people to come and be jurors. They put together a large grand jury.
Yeah.
At times, there have been over 70 people in that particular grand jury.
And some of them are judges, aren't they? Like, they're actually qualified.
Hang on,
Joe.
Hang on, though, Joe. Huh? The question is, the criticism of this group is, what authority do they have over the Pope?
Right.
That's the question,
and
yeah.
My answer, or my debatable answer might be, why wouldn't they have authority over the Pope? What authority does the Pope have over them?
Okay. Let's bring this to a chain of title concept. Okay. let's ask ourselves this question. Okay, when you're taking an oath to a establishment, are you not? Some kind of establishment, whether it's a government, whether it's an ecclesiastical government like the Catholic, the Roman Church. Okay, whatever it is, you're taking an oath to an establishment of some type. Okay, every time you're taking an oath, it's always to some type of an establishment. Now, let's put that to the side for a moment. Let's ask ourselves this question. Okay, what that establishment is chartered upon something. Okay, it has to come from someone. Okay, the people are always the top. The sovereign people in union are what charter any organization. Okay. When you have a government, it
you
comes
know that
up,
to be true, right, Joe?
Right.
Say that again. What, Stephen? What was the question?
I said, you know that to be true right there, right? The last thing what? He said, sovereign yep. people in union.
Yep. Right. Yeah, the sovereign yeah, people in union, you know, they charter the government, right? They bring it up and they ratify a constitution or whatever they want to call their governing document. And that's how a government is formed. So it always comes up from the people. The people are the top of the hierarchy. So then given that chain of title, that everything comes up from the people, we have to ask ourselves, who is the Pope responsible to? Is he not responsible to the people? Now, this is the problem. Religion has dictated that the Pope is only responsible to God. Okay. That's their canon law. In the church, in their own governing, government structure, says that he is only responsible to God, that somehow he's immune from all this, prosecution. Now, we don't see it that way. We see it completely different. We see that the people is the collection of the people that chartered, these structures. Okay. So we ultimately stand over them and have to adjudicate these kind of matters. We can't expect them to adjudicate themselves, can we? I mean, are governments going to send judges to jail? I don't think so. Okay. I've never seen a judge put handcuffs on himself yet. So somebody's got to adjudicate those matters. Who's going to adjudicate those matters? They're not going to adjudicate themselves. It's going to have to be the people who rise up and take on the due process of common law and adjudicate these matters. And that's all that's going on here. So you ask the question, you know, is it, you know, do they really have authority over the Pope? Well, that's up to the people to decide. Do the people have authority over the Pope, or do we believe that the Pope only has authority,
hey, Rick,
you know, from God? Go ahead.
Rick, I posed this to another sovereign one time. The only problem I see is the recognition of any of this mm-hmm. in one of their courts.
Oh, sure.
Or yeah, not actually one of their courts, but any government. Is any kind of a verdict going to be recognized by a government?
Stephen, I would ask this question back. Why are we so demanding that any government on this planet give a verdict in this particular case? The governments are equal. There's no government anywhere in this world that's above another government, because it all stems from we the people. So why are we so... Why do we corner ourselves by asking ourselves to always, we have to verify everything through governments all the time. The governments are underneath us. We created them. I don't see why we're having to constantly go back through
the
governments.
Yeah, we've just been lazy.
That's right. We're not doing our civil duty. Our civil duty is to take authority over these situations when they come up.
Yep.
And 100+ years ago, that would have happened too.
Yeah.
Right.
And this is why direct democracy does seem to make sense. And it's why I would consider voting, even though I did bring in all those sort of other sort of problems that come with direct democracy. But what it would do, what it has done in Switzerland anyway, is it, I mean, we'll get back to the Pope and in a second. But this is a plug for in my own mind. Cause you know how often sometimes you work out what you think just by talking.
This is
work out what you think by talking as a woman radio.
Yeah. Jill, I just wanted to also add, Jill, that direct democracy is the fastest growing political party in Ireland too.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
Mm. Well, I'd believe it. It's a really good idea. Because what it is this is a citizen-based referendum, and now with our computer sort of abilities, you only have to vote about four times a year, and they're on big issues. And what it would do, it would make more people more involved with politics because you have to vote on something. So then you say, well, I better go and find out what I have to vote on. The same as when I do a show, I better say, I have to go and say, oh, I'm doing a show on the seven deadly sins. I better go and work out what the seven deadly sins are. You know what I mean? You start Googling and getting different people's opinions and, you know, go off and get some. It's the same with voting, you know, like if we had to vote four times a year, we'd be a lot, I would have learned a bit more about politics.
Can I bring up an ugly subject here, Stephen?
Be my guest.
You already are. <Right.
Well, you know, let me. Can I explain the reason why I don't like democracy? I really need to explain this because democracy to me is pure evil. And here's the reason why I say it. Okay, there's gonna be some people who are gonna say, "Oh, that's a socialist guy, that Rick guy." No, that's not it at all. Let me explain.
I know what you're going to say already. Well, people are smarter than others.
No, I just need to explain this. Okay. Yeah. All right. I would ask you this question. Okay. Let's take, traveling, for instance. Let's take traveling as the referendum that comes up. Okay. Somebody says, that people shouldn't be texting and driving. That's a big one. That's all over the place here in the States. Okay, there's all kinds of counties that are.
Yeah, you mean traveling and not driving? Is that what you mean?
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean, Stephen.
Yes.
But okay, texting and driving. That's a big one. Okay, it's all over the place.
What
but let me.
You?
What's that?
What happened to you? Go ahead, Rick.
Okay, so. Let's say a direct referendum comes up from the citizens and they vote. And 51%, because in a democracy, you're just talking about the majority, right? So two wolves and a sheep decide what's for dinner. And they decide, okay, the sheep's for dinner. So they decide that it's not good to text and drive. So now if you're caught texting and driving, you now owe a $500 fine, okay, for that particular thing. Now, that sounds great on paper, but let me explain to you why it's not a great concept. Because if we are all sovereigns, we have to ask ourselves this question. Would a sovereign, okay, assuming that we are all kings, like, you know, King George, King James, King whoever, okay, or Queen Elizabeth, okay, let's just assume for a moment that Queen Elizabeth actually drove, okay? We know she doesn't. She's got people who drive for her and all that kind of thing, but let's just assume for a minute that she drove. Do you think an officer would even if they saw her texting, do you think that they would pull Queen Elizabeth over? No.
Well, this is what's so hilarious, because this is why I might take you off your train of thought, but I was saying to Stephen the other day, well, Queen Elizabeth's being the perfect sovereign because they put an order out for her arrest and she's ignoring it. You know, the International Jurist Court of Common Law Court said, you're under arrest, and she's going, oh, ignore that, which is exactly what we all should do. Like, she's a good example of sovereignty, isn't she?
Exactly. But see, here's the thing, okay? You know, she's texting and driving. Clearly, the officer sees her and doesn't pull her over. Why? Because the officer knows that she's a sovereign. He doesn't mess with her because she's a sovereign. She has the ability to do that. Unless she hurts somebody doing it, she's not going to get in trouble. Okay?
Yeah.
It's just that simple. So now, you know, separate that and ask yourself, why is it that 51% of the people can tell 49% of the people what they can and can't do unless they hurt somebody? That's the reason I don't like democracy.
Okay, well, what about if we take it to smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and we take it to communities? Like, we're all okay, so what do you do? What's an alternative? Now I feel sick again. I do when I can't work out the solution
trying to make you sick, Jill. I'm not trying to make you sick. It's just one of those deals where it kind of bothers me because I don't think we're fully thinking through this. If we really recognize, like our Declaration of Independence says, that all men are created equal and that governments are derived from the consent of the governed, if that is truly what we believe, then that makes us all sovereigns. And if we are all sovereigns, then there's those unalienable rights you cannot take away from us. There has to actually be an injury to produce a crime. There has to be something that you can call on.
That's right. Yeah. The state cannot be a victim. We hear that a lot on people's internet, Jill. Who did I harm?
Yeah.
What's my crime? Who did I harm? Where's your witness? You know?
Right. So this is a very troubling situation. I constantly hear our government here. Well, and there I go again, calling it a government. I'm legitimizing it myself. It's a corporation.
You fool.
these people over here. Okay. This.
You just gave up your SMJ there, Rick.
This pretend government over here, they do the same thing. They constantly say, our democracy. And it sickens me because I know what that means. And that's, so Joe, you're not the only one.
Our dictatorship. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Sorry, I just leaned into the mic and yelled. That's a good way to get everyone.
Listen to me.
Sorry.
So forgive me. I get passionate about this democracy thing. Go ahead.
No, I just get excited and I just want to talk at the moment. I'm excited. But after that, I just sort of chill out again and can't think of a thing to say. Oh, I've chilled out again. I'm gone blank. I'm Madam.
I'm giving it back to Stephen now. Stephen, well, it's all yours.
This Ralph Epperson, I'll be having on Wednesday. He's got a 4-hour video on YouTube, and he also sells it on DVD. I got it in my history. I'd have to look it up again, but he's going to go over a lot of stuff on Wednesday. What he's been researching, why the Constitution doesn't mean anything to us anymore, and how we can get our sovereignty back, I believe. I think that's what he's going to try to explain.
Well, he's not here now, Stephen. I want to talk about something now.
Well, let's talk about something now.
Well, let's go back to weather. Like, this really creeps me out. My dog's growling at something. I hope there's not a visitor, but it really freaks me out, the fact that these people in the so-called Illuminati, which I didn't even want to think exists, you know, and the Skull and Bones clubs and all those stupid people, that they actually, that they worship these stupid things and they think that it's going to benefit them. And then there's this total sort of boys club. And then some of them are into this thing called Ninth Circle Satanism. And I read that the Queen of England is into it and the stupid bloody popes are into it. Do you think that's true?
I'm gonna give you want that one. You want that one, Stephen?
go for it.
All I can say, Jill and Stephen, is that witnesses are coming forth, and we've been told that documents are being handed over that give evidence of these things. Okay, now until it becomes public evidence, and until it's out there in the public, we can all think and say whatever we want to think and say.
Jill, the facts are corporations and government officials have been caught over and over and over again over the years trafficking children, sacrificing children, molesting children, doing all kinds of unspeakable things.
You've got to be able to say fuckwits at the same time as you're talking about that. Like, you can swear on air when talking about that, can't you? Because, I mean, the word fuckwit is just nothing compared to the concepts you just came up with. And this is what is unspeakable. That it is absolutely, like, this is what I'm discovering, is that these people do these things and they actually have control in our world. And I'm horrified. I just thought they wouldn't have a hope in hell.
Well, there's a man named David Icke. He's been a researcher for over 20 years now, about 24, I think he says, 24 or 25. He says these people are possessed. I heard you mention something about the word possession during the break, mm-hmm. Jill, and I was going to bring that up.
That was me.
Okay, yeah.
I even read that they've got a fellow who lives in the Vatican, you know, he's an ordained priest who's their exorcist, and he reckons that they have some sort of devil in the Vatican or some bloody bullshit.
That came from a internal prophecy, I believe. If a certain friend of ours was on this show, Stephen, he'd tell you all about it. That was some kind of an internal prophecy that came from within the Vatican. That is, I can't remember the name of that particular bishop that said that, but yeah, something about the smoke of the devil is in the Vatican already. That it's creepy. I don't remember who it came from.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is sort of really freaky. And then the people who are listening want to go and check out Kevin Annette, K-E-V-I-N, Annette, A-N-N-E-T-T. He's the fellow who's leading this tribunal. And that's called the, I've just posted a confidential memo. I don't know how that ended up on the internet. But anyway, the International Common Law Court of Justice, which has its central directorate in Brussels, who are doing all these things. The thing is, people don't actually get to come and defend themselves, do they? So how do they do this? How do they run a court case where there?
They've been offered the luxury of coming and defending themselves, I would imagine, right, Rick?
They have. I mean, one of the accusations that's out there, and, there are some radio shows around, not on your network, Stephen, but on others, that have been promoting these gurus who like to say that Kevin Annette is a fraud and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things, getting back to the question here, what was that question, Stephen?
I think Jill meant the Pope and the Queen. Have they been?
They've been given the opportunity to speak for themselves, absolutely. And there's a number of ways. There's a number of ways to do that, Jill.
Well, they're ignoring it like a true sovereign would. I have no case to answer.
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, and that's fine. And the way that the court's responding is saying that no answer means
defense.
Yeah, no defense.
Silence is consent. Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those, who's right, who's wrong. Until the evidence comes out and we know what that is, everybody's going to be left to their own opinion.
Okay.
I don't know how to solve that issue on this particular radio show.
Well, nor do I. But the thing that I sort of really want to bring to people's attention is that if this is going on, I'd like to tell all the little Satanists in the world how completely deluded they are, and how on earth do you think that you can ever get any everlasting power by harming others? Like, it's such a lack of logic. I mean, if people were able to understand that spirituality can actually be analyzed both on an intellectual level as well as a spiritual level, the thing that I like about Tibetan Buddhism, for example, is it uses the intellect to undo the confusion in the intellect so that then you're in a safe place that you can let go into into meditation or into prayer, if that makes sense to you. So for example, this is why if somebody's a Christian, for a Buddhist, from a Tibetan Buddhist point of view, you wonder why the Dalai Lama is so keen on people hanging on to their own religions, and supporting their religions and not fighting over religions. Well, one of the main reasons is if I want to have a transcendental transcending my mundane, state, if I want to have what one might call a spiritual experience or a meditative experience or an experience of God or any of those things, I'm not going to be doing that as long as I've got my reference points that I have to navigate through, to protect myself. I need to be in a very safe environment,
Jill.
And I need to be, yeah.
Can I address I just want to address your message before I forget. They know the fact that we all are connected spiritually. We all have a connection somehow. I cannot think of anybody, and I've asked many, many people this question. Have you ever walked to the telephone going to call someone and the other person you were going to call, you pick up the phone and they're on it?
I had a
Has
dream.
That ever happened to you, Jill?
I've come from a family of clairvoyants. Okay, it's a genetic factor. We all have it, yeah.
Hey, okay. That's happened to me 4 times in my life.
Oh.
I've had probably...
That's a lot.
Yeah. I've had probably 45 or 50 deja vu moments in my life.
Yeah.
They absolutely know that we are connected spiritually. They are trying to break us. They are attacking.
Well, this is I'm trying to break them
attacking,
at the moment.
Yeah. they are attacking.
And you interrupted me.
They are,
go on,
they
go
are attacking
on.
Us on every single degree of the 360 degrees of the circle. They are attacking us on every single degree. They're attacking us spiritually. They're attacking us physically. They're attacking us chemically. They're attacking us mentally.
Why?
To break. They don't have control.
I see. They're scared.
They have to keep us separated, Jill. Just like, you know, and you know that.
This big they we're talking about.
They have to keep. Why do you think the boogeyman's in the Middle East? Because he's scary and he has brown skin. So we have to nuke every one of them, Jill. We have to kill them all because they're scary.
They're
different than us, Jill.
We'll call him he just for you, Jill.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Rather than it. As I'd like to call
they
God.
They don't want people talking together, Jill. They don't want people working out their problems.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to tell you something about their problems, and that is, this is what's so stupid about you stupid, bloody, idiotic Satanists, is you don't get that you won't have a really true spiritual experience as long as your ego's involved in it. And this is why I'm saying it's good for people to hang on to their religions, because if I'm a Jesus freak, and I've loved Jesus like you are, I've loved Jesus all my life, if this is the case, and I've become very comfortable, and I've prayed to Jesus, and I actually have,
But they do want that spiritual experience. They just don't want to share it.
Let me finish. They can't have it. I'm just telling you, you're bombing out, Satanists, and I'll tell you why you're bombing out. And that is the Satanists are bombing out because they cannot relax. And you cannot have a true spiritual experience as long as your mind is ticking over in a state of hypervigilance. It will not be a penetrative, deeply fulfilling, blissful, realization. It'll be more like some sort of pornographic sort of orgasm rather than a blissful union oneness experience. Like if you were to measure them in levels from 1 to 10, then Satanism would be minus 10. Or, you know, in terms of the type of attainment that they can have. Yet they still think they have some sort of blissful experience. But I'm saying there's no blissful experience in that. That's like a cheap thrill. That's a cheap, nasty thrill compared to the type of blissful experiences that some religious, you know, truly devoted to goodness people, they never get wrinkles. Look how ugly the Pope looks. You know, who murdered those people, that last acting. He's covered in wrinkles and stress. You know, look at the Dalai Lama. He's hardly got a wrinkle on his face or other people. You know what I mean? Like great teachers or great yogis, great masters of the mind or God or saints, great holy, truly holy people. You can see it all over their face. It radiates out of their being. Look at how ugly Prince Philip looks, you know, and all those people who are supposedly meant to be connected with pedophilia and things like that.
Prince Philip and Prince Charles, they believe they get their power and their energy from these children.
Well, you might have read that, and they're just examples, but, I mean, well, it's just, look, people need to think more clearly. That's the thing. Like, this is me bringing it back to multi-faith, you know, back to sort of, there's a more word than multi-faith now, religious pluralism, you know, where people are allowed to have parallel lives running side by side. And, you know, I'll go and do my meditation and Rick will go and do his and you'll go and do yours, you know, but the one who's going to make the most progress and have the most wonderful experience is the one who can relax the most. Because it's actually an ultimate state of relaxation and then tapping into our divine nature. Satanism is not a state of relaxation, tapping into your own divine nature. That's where you've bombed out, Satanist. You're following an illogical path. It's a completely illogical path. There's no logic in it. They make up fantasized logic, which is I need to have sex with this child and put it into these different patterns and enter some geometric blah, 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 while I cause them the most excruciating, murderous pain and then I cut their throat. But it's not a path to anything except you know, maybe one aspect of their mind glimpses the purity of the child's mind. And maybe by drinking the child's blood, they get some sort of hemoglobin that might be good for them. But you'd be far better off to learn to relax and meditate and
be a complete space traveler. You're also talking about people that aren't mentally stable, though, Joe.
But we're talking about the leaders of the world.
Yes, we are.
Hang on a minute.
I think it would
get him,
be,
Rupert.
I think it would be very. Is that Rupert Murdoch?
No.
Oh,
okay. Her dog's name is Rupert.
No, I was just wondering. You know, Stephen, I think we should hook Jill up with Rob Skiba. It would be an interesting interview for her to have.
Yeah. Have you had Rob on?
I have not had Rob on, but I appreciate Rob, and I think that some of what she's saying might become more clear once she understands
the history.
Like, yeah, right.
I've had Rob on once. I'm trying to get him on again.
My friend the farmer has turned up, and I have to go and bring in wood. So if you're still here in 10 or 15 minutes, well and good. Otherwise, thank you very much for having me. But
oh, you have to go run off, do you?
Hmm?
You have to go run off?
Yeah, just for now, because Terry's arrived, my farmer friend.
She's eloping, Stephen.
Okay.
I'm eloping. I'll try not to fall in the hay with him.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
If you don't make it back in time.
I'll see you soon.
All right. If you don't make it back in time, have a good night.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Thanks, Joe.
I'll listen to you, though, so talk about me behind my back so I can hear you, will you?
Well, I hope we don't get bit. Excuse me. I hope we don't get a big echo, but no, we're not going to talk about you behind your back. No, I think you know, I hit the nail right on the head there, Rick. We're not talking about mentally stable people,
right? Or at least not with a full mind of their own.
Yeah, yeah. You mean the manipulation of the mind or CIA mind control? Is that what you're trying to get at?
Well, either that, or we could get into Genesis 6 and the fallen angels and that type of deal too. It can get really creepy real fast.
Explain a little more. Genesis 6.
Well,
I'm not sure what Genesis 6 is.
Well, we're talking right. You're talking about the fallen angels, right? The ones that were kicked out of heaven, right? And then they went into the daughters of man, and they had giants, a race of giants. Right?
Sure. Okay.
You're familiar with that.
Yes.
Now, okay, but these fallen angels, you know, they're not human. So where do their spirits go when they die? Well, so you have to ask the question, right? When you start talking about, you know, you mentioned the word possession earlier. You have to ask yourself the question about possession and ask yourself the question about where do these, you know, what happens to these things? These fallen angels, after they've passed away, you know, their spirits, can they die? You know, what? There's all kinds of questions. It's just one question leads to the next, leads to the next, leads to the next. And is it plausible that these agents, do we want to call them agents, are receiving or being possessed by these same fallen spirits?
Certainly. And I mentioned David Icke earlier, and his explanation is there's a certain bloodline of, allegedly, a certain bloodline of people that can only receive these demonic possessions. And they subsequently do, and the demons are the ones that are actually receiving the power of the essence of a child.
Right. See, and that kind of lends to this idea of the ninth circle, which comes from Dante's Inferno, which if you look at the ninth circle, and I challenge everybody out there to look at the ninth circle, ask yourself, you know, who is on the ninth circle of hell, according to Dante's Inferno? And you'll see that it's the Nephilim. Who are the Nephilim? The very same people that we just talked about.
The fallen angels. Yep.
The fallen angels. And they're the ones that are on this ninth circle of hell, according to Dante's Inferno. So is it all fitting together? There's pieces that are fitting together. Things are looking kind of, you know, strange. You know, am I a conspiracy theorist? Whatever. I've been called worse.
Yeah. So have I. that's just nothing but a personal attack anyways.
Right.
And a conspiracy is if one or more people conspire to do something, that is what a conspiracy is.
Right.
And that's the reason why they always have these single nut jobs that always seem to do these killings, whether it's President Kennedy or President Lincoln or John Lennon, you know.
Right, right.
They all seem to be single nut jobs because they don't want anyone else but a single nut job. And I'm almost astonished that John Hinckley Jr. didn't get killed that day, you know, because most of the other ones got killed, allegedly anyways. I guess there's evidence out there. There's evidence out there that says that John Wilkes Booth may have lived until the 20th century. I know it's kind of weird, but Ralph's going to tell me that on Wednesday. I think we're going to get into that anyways. Ralph Epperson. I'm going to have him on People's Internet Radio. I made a Facebook event, so anybody like to check that out? I guess I probably could give... we could give our Facebook and all our contacts out before we wrap this up here, Rick. But you got some comments on something I just said, or
no? I would look forward to listening to Mr. Epperson.
Ralph,
that,
yeah.
Yep, that sounds like a really exciting and interesting show. I'm always up for a little more education.
Yeah, are you? You were once a member of MSI, weren't you?
As far as their chat room, yes.
Yeah, the chat room. Mm-hmm. Well, you could still get in there, too, by, I think, if I'm not positive, I think you can still type in MSI and get into it, but I'd have to check it. But I'll give you a link to it, though.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Well, we still have about, 6-7 minutes here. Where else are we going to go? What do you think it's going to take to... what do you think we should take the a Catholic Church down? Do you think it should be taken down as an establishment?
Well, that is a very popular question. In my particular opinion is how far do I want to go with this answer is what I'm trying to think to myself here. Really, to be honest with you, it's not an institution that has any true authority. That's my opinion. I've been down this road and I've talked to many priests and friends who are steeped in the Roman Church, and they've had, we've had debate back and forth about the origin of its authority. And it's my opinion that origin doesn't exist, that the keys of authority that they believe were handed to them were not handed to them. I do believe that authority was handed to each of us who would take it as created beings in the image of God. We are each capable of taking that authority and applying it to our own lives. And I believe that's the idea of being engrafted into the vine. But as far as an establishment, I don't think it has any validation at all. So I guess to answer your question, if you ask me, Rick, do you think that we should take down the entire establishment? I guess I would have to agree. It doesn't really serve a purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the entire establishment needs to be taken down anyways, not just the Catholic Church, but all forms of government. I think they need to be abolished. And I don't mean physically either. I mean somehow abolish them without physical altercations. Don't know how that can happen, but I don't know. I think it needs to happen.
Well, we don't really want anarchy either, though. Anarchy isn't probably the answer. I think that we kind of need government, but not this one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think maybe on a local level. Who knows? Maybe even states. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there, but I know the answer is not what we have right now.
Right. I have a hard time separating what we have now from the military-industrial complex and from all the things that they are constantly you know, doing. It's just pure evil. The droning of innocent women, children, and even men that haven't really done anything necessarily wrong, but just happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, or accused of a crime that they've not come to have their due process in. It's nuts, Stephen. I don't even know how to categorize it. I can't give it any credential at all.
Yeah. That leads us back to the original topic, and that's Palestine and Israel. What's the solution there? People have gone over and created human shields. I'm not sure if that's going to happen again or not, but I know that there's been Americans in the past that have gone over and created human shields. They've had little tiny successes, but still nothing from the mainstream media, and still not even a boo from the mainstream media on what actually goes on over there.
Well, I don't think we're going to get anything from the mainstream media. We need to give up on them, turn them off. Don't watch them. Don't listen to them. Just turn it off.
I have long ago.
Yep.
I haven't had a cable bill in over 4 years now.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. I haven't had a TV in over 3 years. I gave it to my niece. It was a nice, 42-inch TV. I just said, come and get it. And cheers.
Wow. Not sure what we do without Netflix.
Yeah. Do you have a cable bill?
I've got a Dish.
Okay.
Yep, I've got a Dish, but I mean, I got to be honest with you. It's basically like football, that type of stuff. The kids' cartoons. But as far as like propaganda, news networks, that type of stuff. If we find that on in this house, that's like the unpardonable sin.
Well, we got about a minute left here, Rick. So why don't you go ahead and tell people how they can get in contact with you or listen to your shows?
Sure. Well, I invite anybody who wants to know more about what we're doing to come out to www.therockofsalem.org. That's therockofsalem.org. Or you can listen to our archived calls on blogtalkradio.com/South Dakota DP. That's like double play, South Dakota DP. So thanks, Stephen, for having me on.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome, Rick. And I can be caught on peoplesinternetradio.com on Wednesday and Friday, and Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com on Sundays. And here on PSN Radio on Saturday nights. So thanks to Angel, and looks like Jill didn't make it back, so I will say thanks to Jill, and thank you, Rick, and hopefully I will see everyone next week. Let me put a little something on here to take us out, so just thanks another again. Little intro. Yes, thanks, everyone.